I was sitting through the last lecture and I thought, what is there left for me to say? That's always the dilemma of the last speaker. But I think there is something for me to say. I was to give the Christian response to Debbie Wiseman. And I think one thing I'd like to focus on is the word recommitment, that we have in this age that we are a need for recommitment. And I suppose the one event that galvanised us in the Western world was the events of September the 11th. Dialogue has not been the same since that day. In fact, trialogue has become sort of very, very prolific since that time. And in a way, the focus on Jewish-Christian relations seems to have, in my opinion, have become less to the fore. And yet, I think that this is a time, it's essentially a time, that we have a great need for dialogue. We have a great need for trialogue, but dialogue, we cannot lose our focus. So we really need to focus on this. I just wanted to read something that was written by Tony Strubent from Auckland, the Council of Christians and Jews, and it's sort of following this line of, well, my idea of recommitment. And he just says here, this is his book called Beyond Contempt. It was published last year, Removing Anti-Jewishness from Christian Worship, which, as you remember, is, or you would have noticed, is one of the points that is pointed out in the Christian response in the Berlin document. Now, he says here, you would dispute the progress of the past 5 or 6 decades. But there has been a feeling for some time, at least among those concerned for Jewish-Christian relations, that in the words of Marcus Braybrook, perhaps some of you know him, he's an English gentleman who often comes to the ICCJ meetings, the process has got stuck. The Jews and Christians have climbed a long way together in the last 50 years, but that we seem to have reached a plateau. Particularly, there is concern that while there may be new Christian attitudes towards Jews emerging at the level where councils and assemblies meet, little of this seems ever to trickle down to ordinary parish level. In some ways, nothing has changed. Although the average churchgoer may not be aware of it, Christianity and worship, especially as we shall see, is as infested with anti-Jewishness as ever it was. Now, how many times I've gone into a strange church, a country church, and they've taken the gospel of the day and they've started talking about the bad Pharisees. I mean, you think that we would be beyond that, but it still comes out in many of our homilies, at least in Catholic churches. I can't say for other churches. So a great deal of research has gone into looking at why this might be. So he says that the reasons for the apparent loss of momentum to repent of anti-Jewishness after the post-war impetus are not unexpectedly multi-layered. So considering one of the upper layers first, one analysis says that as long as Jewish-Christian dialogue is dominated by male clergy and academics, meetings at conferences and publishing official statements, it is unlikely anything new will ever trickle down. So we all know the complaints about male clergy, I mean, both in the Jewish community, the Christian community. I mean, women don't always get a fair go, do they?
No.
So that is a problem in dialogue, and it's something that, well, it's always there in the background. I mean, as long as women are not treated well, it doesn't bode well for religion. You know that there's... Anyway, what is needed is to unblock the process. In this analysis, we need less hierarchical institutions in order to facilitate democratic dialogue and change. We need to go out and meet each other. that Jews don't become someone who is walking in he's Abraham or he's Isaac. We don't know the Jewish person next door. That's something that we have to do. And I suppose I have been particularly lucky because for 30 years or so I've worked directly with Jews at Sydney University running the Archive of Australian Judaica. I rig up Jews all day. I have Jews after me for records, you know. So I have got to know very well lots of Jewish people. And I'm lucky enough to have learned Hebrew, so if you're talking away to your pal in Hebrew, I know what you've said.
Be careful.
You better be careful. But that's a reality of knowing Jews. It's so different from talking about Jews. And I think many Christians, it is just talking about Jews. We're talking about the Old Testament, which again is a banned phrase, you might say. What do we say instead? We're still arguing about whether to call it the Hebrew Bible, or we get out of it by saying the Jews call it the Tanakh, and the Christians, the Old Testament. Now, Amy Jill Devine wants to leave it at the Old Testament. Anyway. So, Marcus Braybrook suggests that the reduced Christian interest nowadays in relations with Jews may be due to the growing influence of African, Asian and South American churches. And now you mentioned this about how the Berlin document doesn't really speak to those churches that are not European or American. Well, I suppose you can't have everything. They are theologically conservative, that's true. They've had little or nothing to do with Jews. Now, when I visited the Philippines, I was absolutely astonished to find the level of anti-Semitism there. There's hardly any Jews there at all, just a very small community. But you say these attitudes have come over from, what, the colonialism that's happened in the Philippines, the Spanish, maybe the Americans, whatever. So, and then, of course, another thing that's very difficult in dialogue, which we find, is the question of Israel. Now, Israel, the time of Seelsburg, did not exist as a state, but now it does. It tends to be something that dominates Jewish-Christian relations. There are dreadful problems. One year in Sydney, we had to cancel a service that we have every year in St. Mary's Cathedral for the Shoah because there was going to be an anti-Jewish demonstration at the cathedral, and the administrator of the cathedral cancelled the service, and then I had to face the music with the Jewish Board of Deputies. It was the most difficult time I've ever had. So we do have lots of problems because of the way the media speaks and so on. So this has been something that we have to face in our dialogue. So anyway, he seems to think that Jewish-Christian relations may have gone off the boil, which I'm inclined to think it's true, because it's become, you find that there are multi-groups springing up in Australia in trialogue, but not so much the Council of Christians and Jews, you might say, is the group that works on dialogue with Jews and Christians, which is vitally important. Now, Professor Morris actually went through the whole document, the whole 12 points. So I thought that I might just look a little bit at the last 4 points, from point 9, perhaps you might like to get that out, to point 12, which I think are perhaps the most innovative part of the Berlin document. The part that maybe, my experience, our council hasn't addressed so much. I think the first one, to enhance interreligious and intercultural education. Now that certainly is something that in my experience we have started to work towards. But it has got a long way to go, so this is what we might say is on our wish list. I think that a key word in the document is recommitment, that we can't just sit back and say we've done it all, we have to do something about it. Now, what I was impressed with, on the web page of the ICCJ is the educational document. Now, this has just been put up in the last couple of weeks and I caught up with it. Now, I read this. It said, and this was to do with the last point 9, the love of all creatures must be alive at the heart and in the soul, love of humanity especially, and love of all nations, everyone, desiring their ascent and development spiritually and materially, with an inner love from the depths or the heart, an inwardmost being, desiring to benefit and see good for all nations, desiring to improve their endeavours, to make happy their lives. Do you know who wrote that? Rabbi Cook. Now that is a most marvellous statement. So it says here, what is fundamental, and I think it's fundamental to all dialogue, is the knowledge that we as human beings are created in the image of God, and as such must act accordingly. So if you don't love your, you know, other human beings, why would you bother to wish for their good, for dialogue? It is absolutely fundamental to remember that we are all created in the image of God, and I think that is really hitting the nail on the head. When it comes to the whole basis of dialogue, the whole basis of reconciliation, that we don't see Jews as a textbook person, that they are real, or that, and we don't see dialogue as something that is absolutely separated from life. And I think it was Debbie who wrote, now in one of the documents, the Berlin documents, he called it the bumpy road to Jewish-Christian relations or something like that. Now in it, Debbie again hits the nail on the head. She said there are three essential things in our civilization. One is that there be justice and enough food for all humanity. The second one was that we care for our environment. And the third, that is absolutely essential, is interreligious dialogue. So, you know, this is how I think the last 4 points of the Berlin document are putting it all in its context. It's not just something out there that we just do, have a polite cup of tea and say, you know, how Jews mustn't speak about Pharisees. It's making it, I think the Berlin document is trying to make interreligious dialogue part of our lives, part of not just the lives of Jews and Christians, of Muslims, of Sikhs. It's trying to broaden it out. And this was the whole thinking when I was working on this. I had to work on the last point, environment. It was to broaden it out, to make it relevant. And it means it's a type of recommitment, but in some ways, Jews and Christians haven't focused on working together so much. We haven't focused on, for instance, working together for environmental stewardship. We might have worked individually, but have we actually worked together? I haven't had that in my experience. And I think that's something that is going to happen, we hope. This is sort of on our wish list. It's something we're thinking about, but we need to push it further. And I think that what's essential in this whole document is our recommitment to working together, to being with each other. I mean, we know that anti-Semitism has not gone away. It will never go away, perhaps. But we have to be aware that it is still there. I mean, that was one of the key points of Seelisberg, of course, was anti-Semitism. It's not there. It's always been there. We have to keep working at it. But I think that when we look at the last 4 points, we have something that's more innovative, and it's something to strive towards. So a time for recommitment to dialogue. I don't quite know what else to say. But if we go back to the first part, you might say that personally I've done a great deal of work on the parting of the ways. That was my thesis. But I don't wish to speak about that. But certainly in giving a Christian response, I think that that point of Rab Cook saying love of humanity and humanity made in the image of God is absolutely vital for dialogue. So I think that's all I want to say, but perhaps people might have questions because I know that I've probably left out a great deal. But that's all I really wanted to say.
Marianne, thank you so much for the time.